We're back with another episode of Skating in Circles, where we get to talk about skating in circles. This episode is going to be a little bit of a Miami Ultra Skate recap, as we get to hear from Corey Wolf talk about her experience during this year's 24-hour challenge. Corey was able to hammer out a grand total of 246.74 miles this year, and we got to talking about sort of how the event went from each of our perspectives and shared insight into what went well, as well as some of the things we could maybe do differently for next year and future Ultra Skates. Corey also runs the Social Push Cincinnati group, where she heads up weekly rides and meetups for skaters in the area. I've always thought that the Social Push concept was an excellent method for generating community around skateboarding, so it was great to hear more about how these groups are curated and maintained. As always, thank you for listening. I'm your host, Max Frank. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the Skating in Circles podcast. I'm here with Corey Wolf. Corey, how you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Pretty well. We're coming off about like a month ago was Ultra Skate. It feels like it was yesterday.
It does. I feel like I'm reliving it at times. My nightmares and my dreams.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The waves of emotion for sure. So for the listeners, where do you live? Where do you call home?
Well, don't tell anyone, but I live in Covington, Kentucky. It's kind of weird because I run the Social Push Cincy group, but it's actually just across the river. A lot of people don't know that for some reason that Kentucky and Ohio border each other. But yeah, I'm actually just right across the river in Covington.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I definitely didn't know that. Like, I consider myself pretty geographically aware, and I didn't even realize that Kentucky sounds like such a southern state. Ohio sounds like it's cold there, so it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I never really imagine myself in Kentucky, but you know, here I am.
Yeah, cool. That's great. So that's like western, northern tip of Kentucky.
Yes.
Right on. So another question I love to ask people is, what motivates you? So like what drives you? You can answer it any way you want.
Yeah. I would say in skating, I'm really motivated by people telling me I can't do things for some reason.
Nice.
I guess that's just like the stubborn nature of my personality, but yeah. So I think like maybe skateboarding is, you know, historically women really haven't been given the same opportunities as men, I would say, when it comes to, you know, entering skateboarding world. Mm-hmm. So I entered it at a very late age, I would say 34. And it was just something that I saw this like really beautiful object at an art fair. And I was like, this seems like something that I want to do. And I just kind of picked up this board and it took me a couple years to get into it. And now I would just say it's like the freedom of being on the board and like discovering new places and meeting new people through this scene. But yeah, I think the stubbornness is what kind of got me into it.
Nice. Yeah, that's so good. Like someone will tell you, oh no, you can't do, or like, that's going to be really hard for you. It's like, oh, yeah. Now I'm going to have to do it. Like, you right. know, yeah, I totally get that. That's great. It's a great mentality to have for this kind of stuff too, because even yourself sometimes would be like, I don't know if I can do this.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, last year doing Ultra for the first time, I was like, I want to get to 200. And I told that to a couple people. Like I wasn't going to tell everybody that because I had no idea what was possible. And I think I had only skated like 50 miles ever before in one go.
Wow.
And I told that to a couple people and they were like, okay, well, maybe 150, maybe 100.
No, shoot for the moon. And you got 200, didn't you, the first time?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. 200, we're going to get into Ultra Skate, and I have a specific question about 200 miles that I like to ask everyone. Okay. But before we get into that, real quick, when was your first time skating? You said 34 years old, just like a longboard. Yeah. You found it at the fair?
Yeah. So I started skating at 34. I probably purchased that board a couple years prior to that, actually. I'm 39 now. So yeah, I've been skating overall for maybe 5 years. Started off as a commuter, actually started off skating in circles in a parking lot.
Nice.
Holding the arm of my very patient ex-husband for like probably months. Like I had no confidence that I could do this. It was terrifying to me. I really had no balance. And then, and then maybe a year later, I met up with this Cincinnati longboard crew, and they were doing this downhill stuff, and it just seemed completely terrifying and exciting to me. And so that's kind of how I got into it.
Right. So you're a downhill skater as well, right? You do some downhill, a little all around. That's great. It's great. Yeah. Sometimes it just takes a patient person to sit there with you.
Yeah, you know, for sure. Means
riding the bike. That's what it takes. You've come, clearly you've come a long way, you know, pushing, like we said, 200 miles last year. You did 246.7. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this year. So pretty amazing stuff. That's not like a lot of time, right? 5 years from starting to doing stuff like this. So Ultra Skate, right? We're going to do, this episode is about Ultra Skate recap. We're going to do a little run through and, you know, just kind of break down what happened 2024. First off, getting there. This is kind of a weird question, but I do want to talk about it because everyone's got a different way of handling the skatecation that is 24-hour Ultra Skate, right? Because 24 hours on the board, there's time to sleep before and after. A lot of your vacation time is surrounded around this event. Yeah. Whereas maybe you, if you're going out to like a single day event, like a literal like 4-hour skate, maybe the most, like that's not going to take your whole weekend, right?
Right.
So what was your approach, right? Like, when did you fly in? How many days before?
Yeah, so I had to take the week off. I think I took Tuesday through Friday off. And I got in on Tuesday, and then I had through Sunday. So I learned my lesson from last year, because I think last year I flew in the day prior, and that was super stressful. Just trying to like grocery shop in another city, getting acclimated to the weather, just having time to breathe, like check your setup, maybe go for a short skate, that kind of thing. And then on the back end of the trip, I think I did leave myself one buffer day, thankfully, because I really couldn't move at all. And the case that was the same case this year. But having those extra like couple days leading up to the event this year was wonderful, because I was able to actually spend some time with like Gavin and Callie skating by the water. You know, we had like this nice carbo loading dinner together, and just sort of like catch up with skate friends. And it was really funny because I spent the day with Valentine's Day with Gavin.
Cool.
Yeah, we had breakfast together and like tuned up my setup, and it was just like a really lovely day. And then, yeah, I finished it with a nightcap the night before Ultra, because I was just like, I had anxiety and excitement. And I was like, I'm just going to go out to a bar and enjoy Valentine's Day evening alone.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was actually a really wonderful trip. I mean, mostly was definitely centered around the event, though. Mm-hmm. There was not much time for anything else.
So you flew in Tuesday, you had a couple days. I agree. I think that's the move. Like, just giving yourself like one morning to set your board up, and then like an afternoon to skate it. And then the next day is like registration or whatever.
Definitely.
I think it was Shreddy Mercury who said he saw you guys, like the night before. He was like, so I'm walking down South Beach, and we're just like, you know, it's the night before, two nights before Ultra Skate. And I turn and I see a bunch of people pumping down the path, and it's Gavin. Like, I think it was, and he said it was Corey. Yeah. Corey was there too. And it was like, you know, one of those things, right? We all come to this area and we're like,
yeah,
we might see each other, right? It's a fun thing.
Well, and I love how, you know, the organizers have created some like great things to do after the event as well. I unfortunately couldn't take advantage of like the group skate, but it sounds like Scott curated a really nice day with everybody, you know, visiting some local sites. I just am never in a position to be able to skate the day after Ultra. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that does surprise me sometimes. Like, like the day after kind of sucks and like you're in pain. I feel mostly like the heat and like my body just like got like way too active the day before. So the next day, like my ears are burning, you know, like that's feeling I often get. And like, maybe I don't sleep too well.
Yeah.
But, I don't know what it is, but I've been able to like, I think walking around really helps. I like force myself to walk like to the ceremony, back to the ceremony, and I'll walk as normally as I can. And I find it's difficult, but I find the recovery is a little easier.
This year it definitely was easier. last year, I was just absolutely destroyed. Like, I had a blister the size of my entire pushing foot. Like, it was just one giant blister. And this year, I invested in orthopedic sneakers. And so the blistering was minimal. But, you know, the day after Ultra, I was ordering DoorDash, and, you know, the person was delivering the food like 5 feet from my bed. And it took me like 3 minutes to get to them. I was like yelling to them through the door, "I'm sorry, I'll be right there." So I still was pretty messed up this time around. Yeah. I don't know how you did 210 miles and you're still like fully functioning.
I wouldn't say fully functioning. No. Yeah. we were gonna go to Scott's thing. I was with Miguel, my brother, mm-hmm. My partner Ivy. She came the night before, skipped Ultra, came for the after. but then yeah, Hope was there. So like, we were just kind of hanging out. We're like, we're not really going to make it to the start of the thing. We're like, maybe we'll meet up with them. We ended up on the beach, and that was the rest of the afternoon.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really nice.
Yeah. So I was definitely lounging the day after, for sure.
Yeah.
I wasn't skating, but...
I just don't even know how you could get out of bed. I mean, I couldn't even roll over. It was very pathetic.
Well, you did more miles than me. And speaking of which, you were out there the entire time, weren't you?
Yeah, mostly because I really can't stop. Like, right. I find that if I stop, I can't get going again. Mm-hmm. I don't know how people take naps and get the meals and take advantage of all that good stuff. My goal is to not have to stop at all. So I had to pee like 3 or 4 times at the end of the race, and it probably cost me the world record, honestly, in retrospect, because you know, you're taking in those few minutes to stop. And then I was really struggling to get back on my board. Like, I was feeling unbalanced. I couldn't get back up to speed. My heart rate was different. My adrenaline was different. So I don't know how people do it. Like, I really don't know how you do it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Like, the stopping is brutal, and it costs you so much time.
Yeah.
I had to stop. Like, this is just my personal experience. I had to stop a few times for like digestive issues. I had to like run to the bathroom, you know, and it wasn't as simple as, okay, go to the bathroom, then come back and get back on the board. Like, at that point I was like behind on nutrition, you know, like feeling terrible. And like, then I had to sit down for a while and then get back out. So it was like,
right.
And then you're like, you're saying when you get back out there, you're moving slow. It takes a while to build the momentum again and get the rhythm.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was so thankful this year to have the support of Angel's family. So I did not come prepared with a pit crew at all. I had nobody coming down to support me. And then they stepped in at like the 11th hour and were like, yes, we're going to do everything to help you. It was so incredible. I cried on the track thinking about this, but they truly probably saved me an hour of stopping time. Yeah. Because last year I was stopping to charge electronics, to refill, you know, water bottles, just to kind of get my bearings. And they were just so supportive and cheering me on the whole time. I mean, they were just super attentive the entire 24 hours. I really couldn't ask for a better support group. So just so thankful for that. It makes all the difference.
Yeah, they're amazing people. Great family. Great people. So you said they stepped in, just to clarify, at the 11th hour. You mean like hour 11 or the...
No, the fray, like right before like the race.
Right before the race, yeah.
Yeah, they literally were like helping me fill water bottles like with the nutrition packets. And, you know, I had prepared a lot, but I came with like all my water bottles not filled with the packets. And like Angel's dad was helping me do that. And, I didn't know whether Matt Winslow's family was going to be helping me or whether his was going to be helping me, Angel's, because they had both offered. So it was just kind of like scrambling at the last minute. But they just like really stepped up, and the entire race were just yelling to me, "What do you need?" So I would, you know, I'd be skating by and say, "In the next lap, can you hand me X?" And then they'd have that ready for me, like in a little baggie. And they were just wonderful. There All were a star. Couple times where my charging port had moisture in it, I guess sweat, to my phone. And I couldn't charge my phone at all. And it was stressing me out because I didn't have music. I couldn't figure out what was going on, like pace wise. And somehow they got the moisture out of my phone twice. I'm not sure if they were in the bathroom, like using the blow dryer or something, but the hand dryer, but they were just fantastic.
Wow. That's an all-star pit crew right there.
Yeah, they were great. Highly recommended.
Yeah, that's so cool. So dial back just a little bit to registration day. So as you were saying, you got in a couple of days before, you had time to prepare. So come registration day, how are things feeling? Like what's going through your mind?
I don't know. I think like anxiety and excitement are pretty much the same emotion. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether I was feeling either one of those or both, but I mean, there's just, it's great seeing my skate family after all, you know, all this time. Some people I only get to see once a year. Some people are doing events across the country throughout, you know, I see Gavin often because now he lives in Ohio. But it was wonderful to see everybody and just like check in with people to see what their goals were. You know, unfortunately, a couple people had gotten sick, you know, in the days leading up to the event. And I felt just terrible for them because like you spend all this time training and then you arrive and maybe you get sick from being on the plane or like anything can happen. Oh, so it was just kind of interesting checking in to see where everybody was and how they were feeling. It was nice.
Yeah, it's kind of a mad dash, right? Like you get there, mm-hmm. The gates opened at like 5. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you want to get to bed by like 9 at the latest. Right. so depending on where you're staying, right. You might have to like drive back or whatever.
And yeah, exactly.
I always count on like, oh, I'm going to see a bunch of people at registration. We'll get to talk. And there's never enough time.
There really isn't. I was definitely worried about like waking up on time.
Yeah.
Gavin told me he was going to call me and wake me up at a certain time. I had my hotel calling me, but that never happened. They never called.
Wow, so really?
Yeah, so I was like, at least I had a couple, like I had a backup plan. But my biggest fear is like waking up an hour late, you know, like the race is already going on and then here I am.
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah.
I do like envy sort of, I don't want to say being able to, but like more, it's more like a mentality set where you can like, I'm not gonna start when the race starts. I'll show up at noon. Like there's plenty of time to skate, you know. Like I know my friend Bob Foster from Philadelphia did that the year before. He was going for like 100. He's like, I don't need all 24 hours. I'm gonna get a nice sleep. I'm gonna do my 100 miles, and then me and my wife are gonna go home. So
I love that.
You know, like there's so many ways to do ultra skate. But your mentality of like, yeah, I want to get there right when it starts. I want to skate as many miles as I can in that time, like that's some diehard shit right there. So
well, at least for like the foreseeable future, you know, I kind of just feel lucky that my body is still allowing me to do this at age 39. I'm like, I don't know how I'm gonna be feeling in a few years because I'm already having, you know, joint issues and back pain and stuff like that. Right. So I'm just like, I kind of have to give it my all right now and then I can relax later, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. When is your birthday? I'm just curious.
August 22nd.
So you'll be in the new division next year. Nice.
I will. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. How about you?
I just entered the 30 to 39. I turned 31 this year. So this
is my first. So it's probably a little bit easier to break records in the older age bracket.
I don't know. I guess I know Andy did a bunch of stuff, but mm-hmm. like 40 to 49. Women's records. I don't know how many there are. You might be up against Anne, but I think Anne started later.
Yeah, I think she might be in the 50 to 59. Yeah. I'm not sure. I was really only looking at the 30 to 39 because I knew it was my last year in that category. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I guess it's now or never.
Was Callie, her record is 30 to 39, right?
Hers is, I think, actually 20 to 29 because I just got the 30 to 39 course record.
Oh, you did. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Gotcha. Cool. So you broke the course record, 30 to 39, 3 laps behind the women's overall record and 3rd place overall.
Correct.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. The question I've always asked is what happens, right? Cause we have this open category. We have women's category. Like when a woman gets top 3 open, right? Like she earned the top 3 open. And like typically what happens is they don't give awards to people who won top 3 open. And I was curious what they were going to do, like, because you also got the first place women's for 2024.
Right.
So I much preferred that. I thought for a second, this is what I heard, because I didn't stay for the whole award ceremony. I thought for a second they didn't give you open third. And I was like, that's really weird. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, they didn't. They actually didn't.
Oh, they didn't.
Yeah. They said that because I was not signed up for the open category, I was only signed up for female, that I am not eligible for the open third. And that's just how they're deciding. That's just how they decided to do it. You did get third overall, but yeah, no trophy. So I think that's something that needs to be figured out for the future, because yeah. I would probably be more likely to sign up for the open category if I'm going to try to continue doing, you know, more and more miles. It feels to me like I shouldn't have to decide between the two categories. Like, open seems like it should be the overarching category for everybody if it's called open.
Yeah, that's really fucked up.
I think if you're going to call a category open, then it's open. I mean, I don't know. Call it men's if it's men's.
Like, especially in endurance sports, right? Do you know Courtney Dewalter? She's a famous ultra runner.
Adam brought this up.
She wins. She wins. Yeah. She gets podium, and they'll put her on the podium, right? And then she also, and there's like a second subdivision, right? There'll be like open and then division. And division is usually broken up by gender. It could be age, whatever. Should there just be one category? Or if there's a woman, should there also be a men's and then an open? And then at that point, we have three categories. Like, how many do we need awards for? How many do we need actual trophies for? And how many do we want to just have record? Like, oh, hey, by the way, that's the most anyone's ever skated in that age division on this course. It's like, that's really cool, but maybe it's not that big of a deal to like do like all these age divisions and gender and discipline, right? It's a lot of trophies.
Well, I think it's also complicated by the fact that they've made it so that if you get a podium in either open or women's, then it makes you ineligible for the age bracket trophies. So then you could have the scenario of someone, you know, maybe three people getting first, second, third in 30 to 39, but then you have the fourth place getting first place in 30 to 39.
Yeah. I can tell you from experience, it's not fun. Yeah. It sucks. I got it twice. Another unpopular opinion, but how about we don't do trophies, spend that money on bananas and tailwinds. At other ultra events, they have like tents with bananas, tents with
stuff. Yeah. Like that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it's honestly pretty costly for anybody to participate in ultra. And I think that there's a barrier to attending these types of events because you have the cost of getting there, taking time off work. I mean, you have to be in sort of a privileged position to be able to do events like this regularly. 100%. And I think, however, the organization could offset those expenses by, you know, providing, like you said, bananas, tailwinds, stuff like that would be really great.
It's not an easy task, right? Planning out 24-hour event.
Absolutely.
So like, kudos to them for even pulling it off, right? Like, I don't want to come across as being too critical of the IDSA, or I know they're changing the food situation next year. So I'm excited to see what they come up with, honestly.
I mean, I know Scott is pretty responsive and really doing his best, putting in so much of his personal time. He's not getting paid for this, you know?
Yeah.
I do think they need to sort out this open versus female thing, because it's women are only going to keep doing better and better. And I just think it's discouraging to feel like I said to Scott, like, I'd rather get a third place open trophy than a first place female. I think that the reason that a female category exists in the first place is that women have historically been, you know, not given the same opportunities and are physically have not been able to get podium. That's why we have the female category. It's like, the men's category doesn't need to exist because men aren't the ones who have been at a disadvantage.
Right. There's something like our society that we need to account for also, right? There's something to be said. You mentioned you win women's, you're competing with like 10 people, right? Mm-hmm. The quantity of people competing affects how well people do, right? The more people compete, the more chance someone's going to do really well, right? So
absolutely.
You know, out of 10 people, one of them almost did 250. Like, that's basically on par with any other group of 10 skaters you pick, right?
Yeah, well, and I'm not the only one. I mean, like Saskia Tromp and Roseanne Delaney, any of these women who have done, you know, 250 and then in the 250 range could be at any of these events at any time. And it could be the case. I mean, depending on the day, literally anything could happen. I mean, the historical first and second place leads could have a bad day and, you know, any one of us could be in the podium. So I just think like trying to be proactive and figure this out now instead of like waiting until it happens. Like it needs to happen. The conversation needs to happen now. So mm-hmm. hopefully it is happening in a serious way.
Yeah. I love that.
But yeah.
Yeah. Saskia's record is like 262. And that was, mm-hmm. that would have beaten the world record at one point. Right. So
yeah, I think hers is the world record. And then
I'm like overall world record was like 250 when I think Jeff or Paul did, I forget who it was. Someone did 250.
Oh, wow.
And that was the world record back in, 2013, 2014.
Wild. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. I know she's at 262 and Callie, 251 point something. So yeah, I think I see the next generation of women skaters coming up and I'm like, they're going to be doing well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, definitely. The more the merrier.
Yeah.
So we're talking about registration day. If we could dial back
mm-hmm. sure.
to that, I have a set of questions. So you said nutrition plan, you kind of had it ready to go. You had stuff in bags. What was your situation?
So I didn't really have a nutrition plan, I would say.
Oh, okay.
I bought Pop-Tarts, Cheez-Its, frosted sugar cookies from the grocery store. Like I did not have a plan. I was sorely unprepared. In retrospect, I was really focused on just getting foods that were going to make me happy over the course of the 24 hours
nice.
And not so much on foods that were going to sustain me as an endurance athlete. So when I posted the photograph of my grocery cart on Instagram, Juan reached out and was like, Corey, I got some Martin packs for you. Like, we got to talk. So he showed up with like a handful of Martin packs, which was amazing. And then Angel's family had, I can't remember what kind of hydration or, electrolyte packets for me. I had bought some liquid IV, but no, I really was not taking the nutrition and hydration seriously enough. And I think that is honestly, that cost me probably a lot in the long run, because toward the end of the race, I think for maybe 3/4 of the race, I was doing really well with my hydration and everything. But mm-hmm. Then the water bottles did run out. I think I had to use a few of Angel's. So I probably went through like a 32 pack of bottled water
uh-huh.
and all filled with the, electrolyte packets and so forth. But yeah, they supplemented what I brought, which was very nice of them. I was having issues at the end trying to balance my hydration and salt because like I said, I all of a sudden just felt like I just had to pee the whole like last quarter of the race. And that's just an awful feeling because yeah. you have to decide whether to step off or not and what it's going to cost you and trying to do that math when you're exhausted. You know, I'm like, look, I was kind of referencing the results online, but I didn't realize you could see the mileage. I was just seeing the lap number. So then I was trying to translate, multiply that by 5 and try to figure out exactly, but it's not exactly 1.5. So, just trying to do that math when you're just delirious is difficult. So hopefully I can dial that in for next time. That I'm disappointed that I wasn't better prepared. Yeah.
I love how you mentioned that doing the math.
Yeah.
I've definitely been there around like, 1.46 times 3 is, and it's like, no. Like it's too much. Like there's times. So fun story. My first La Diga I did, I was skating with Carlos Montalvo. He was telling me, he's like, when you get bored out here, just do the math in your head of like how many miles you have left and how many. And I was like, that's a great idea. And like, mm-hmm. it does help, right? When you're on like yeah. a training ride or something that's not 24 hours, basically. It does. Yeah. It is kind of nice to have something to do, but not during 24. Like it gets to a point where it takes so much energy just to do
yeah.
like mental math in your head.
It's a little stressful. I was also just completely out of it because I thought at one point I looked at that big clock at the finish line and it said 13 hours on it. And I thought that that was the amount of time that I had ridden, but uh-huh. it was really the amount of time left. And I remember saying to Gavin, oh, Gavin, look, we only have 11 hours left. And he's like, no, Corey, like, you have 13 hours left.
Try again.
So I clearly wasn't really doing, I was not doing the math properly or, you know, regularly enough. And also, I think it's a little bit difficult because you're being tracked in real time on that app, but you don't really, I wasn't quite sure if that was like, if it was tracking where I was around the course or just every time I passed that finish line. Like I didn't know exactly where I was at any given time. Mm-hmm. So I was struggling with that.
Were you tracking it on your phone or watch or anything?
Yeah, I was. And then it kind of was like updating, like I'd refresh the page and it was saying something differently. So I didn't really know. It's funny, Ohio Downhill Skate, this group that I ride with in Ohio, they were having a Discord chat about my progress and keeping me better updated than I was keeping myself. So like at one point, my friend Owen told me like at hour 8, he said that I was on track to do 272. And I was like, wow, I'm skating maybe too fast right now. And then at hour 12, he was like, she's still on track to do 264. And I had no idea. I really was not. I was kind of just trying to do my normal pace, which is about 10.5 miles an hour that I typically skate on like a 50 mile ride, and just kind of relying on my heart rate to keep myself at a consistent pace. So that was really encouraging to hear that. But then I was worried about like crashing, mm-hmm. you know, just getting too tired. And I did end up, you know, having to slow down later in the race.
Right. Yeah. It's bound to happen, right? You said 3/4 into the race, you kind of started to feel it. Like it has to happen to you at least once, right? And like, I mean, you pushed through it. You were still out there. So that's something.
It did feel like I was moving at about 2 miles an hour at the point.
I do remember because I took a break right at when I hit 200, I think, or before that even. And I was watching your progress and I was like, oh, she's on pace for 250. Like other people were slowing down. I was like, oh, she could, you know, really blow mm-hmm. by a bunch of spots here.
I had no idea though, because all I could see was this fast group of people lapping me. So it was like, you know, Adam and company with like maybe 6 or 7 riders, and it just felt like they lapped me a million times. And I, you know, it was like a little bit discouraging, but I was just kind of keeping my head down and, you know, doing what I do. Like I knew that I was going to try to stay on the track. So I had actually no idea what place I was in for a lot of the time. I really was trying not to look at the time or the place and just kind of stay focused on the heart rate.
Yeah. Stay focused on the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Heart rate's the best thing to focus on.
It's weird. It's like, I feel like it's such an independent, like personal sport. You're out there with all these people, but like, you really have to listen to yourself, your body, and just kind of try to stay mentally with it.
What board were you riding?
The Pantheon Supersonic.
Yeah. With the Karmas or just like.
Yeah. With the Karmas. Nice. Karmas. Yeah. How about you? What were you riding?
I had same setup pretty much. I had a Bear truck in the front because I couldn't get, I wasn't going to pump. So I was like, I just need something that works. And like, you can kind of pump on that. And then just like a don't trip in the back.
Nice.
With the Karmas. And then the G-Bomb bearings. I really like the G-Bomb bearings. I've been using those now. And you said your support crew, you didn't have one, but you got a shout out Angel and Fam.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then I guess Matt Winslow and family also offered to help you. So shout out to
him. I mean, people really stepped up. And Matt's great. I rode with him for a while. We always tend to pace together at races like La Diga and so forth. He's become like my skate buddy. So it's nice to find your people. Usually it's, you know, at La Diga, it would be like Aaron and Matt and me. So really lucky to have met these folks.
Are you going to be at La Diga this year?
Yeah. Cool. How about you?
Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah.
Okay. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. We're doing some planning for it. Carlos and I. It's looking pretty good. Should be good to go.
Yeah.
16 riders right now. So
awesome. What's the max for that?
30.
Is there? Okay.
And we have inline skaters coming this year. I think at least one, maybe two.
Very cool. I saw there's one other woman rider this year, Emily Lingle. So I'm excited to meet her. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I didn't know that. Yeah. I don't know. I think the inline skater might be a woman too. I don't know if that's who it is.
Cool.
So we kind of talked about race day a little bit already, but one thing we hadn't really mentioned was the conditions were really good. Weather was like 70. It was the coldest day of the week for the most part. Some overcast. I don't remember really getting too much sunburn. I got a little bit. How did you feel overall with the conditions?
I was pretty aware that those were probably the best conditions we're ever going to have for an ultra skate. I was like, man, we really have to take advantage of this because who knows what will, you know, what will come. I felt like honestly, it was perfect. There was a little bit of headwind on that backside of the track pretty much the entire day, it felt like, but you know, if you could push through that, it was really pleasant. And then we had that beautiful sunrise in the morning. I mean, it was really enjoyable.
Yeah. No rain. Wind was there, but not as bad as it could have been. Yeah. And your original goal wasn't really to try and make 250. It was just to last the whole time, or what? Did you have a goal?
Sometimes it's hard to have a goal. I didn't really know. I mean, I really just didn't know what I could do because I was having some hip and foot issues leading up to the event. And, you know, I knew that I wanted to at least get over 202 since I got that last year, just try to beat my PR. And I knew that the women's course record for my age bracket was 225. So that was kind of a milestone I wanted to hit.
Yeah.
Because this was my last year in that category. And then I knew that, of course, Callie has the 251.1. So I was like, wow, that would be incredible, but that's probably not doable. I didn't really see that happening. So I just decided to try to stay on pace, you know, with what I usually skate, like this 10.5 miles per hour approximately, and see if I could get close to that. But I really didn't know.
Yeah. I think not focusing on the number is a great tactic. Where you just kind of end up with the miles.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you were 12 hours in, you're not thinking, oh, I got to go another 130 or 120 miles or whatever you were at, right? Like, not thinking, oh, I got to hit 250. I have to skate 120 more miles. Like,
no, I wasn't thinking like that at all.
It can be really daunting, but you ended up doing that, right? Like, so.
How about you? What was your strategy? Like, what was your goal? And
Good question. Actually, so I was training a lot for this one, and then I went to India and had a great time, but I knew I was going to miss some training from that. And then when I came back, I got really sick. So then I couldn't really train through January, and then Ultra Skate's happening. So like I was a little bummed out about that, but I knew I wanted to try for 300 because I want 300. Like I have to keep trying. Eventually maybe it'll happen. Right. So I tried, it lasted about maybe 4 hours, not even, with that front pack and peeled off. So my plan was, you know, like you said, conditions were the best they've ever been for me. And I was like, I got to at least try. So that was my plan. Okay. Go for it. Hang with them as long as I could. I had 90 grams of carbs planned for per hour, which is what Adam does, around what Adam does. And I was like, that should be plenty. Last year, the year prior, I had gotten real burnt out from not eating enough. Really like just empty in my stomach. So I was trying to combat that the whole time. That was my plan. And eventually just, you know, like I said, digestive issues got in the way.
Yeah.
So my goal was like, all right, not 300, but maybe PR, which like my PR is 256. So like no, like that's not going to happen. Okay, maybe 250. And I was like, oh, this could happen. I started to feel good. Like, but then I still had 11 hours to go. And then Eduardo's like, hey, we're racing. And I was like, that was actually really encouraging. Like he was like, it's you, me and your brother, like all like a lap away from each other. And I was going faster than him at the time. But then I kept taking breaks. He passed me and got like 30 miles on me or whatever. So yeah, eventually it just became get 200 and the plan changed as the race went on.
Well, you just have to constantly reassess, you know?
Right.
You really have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, anything could set in, fatigue, weather, injury, mental exhaustion. There's just so many factors and you're trying to plan for all of them.
Yeah. Like having a plan is nice, but it never goes according to plan. Like
halfway
through, I'm like, hey, cause my parents came and they've done this before. So they're veterans support. They're great. They're amazing. And I was like, hey, throw away that whole plan. Like 12 hours in, I'm like, hey, throw away that whole plan. We're just doing this for the every hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, okay, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I was really struggling with the, like, I was not feeling hungry, like, the last quarter of the race.
Oh, really?
I was really struggling to get any food down. It just didn't appeal to me. And those really sweet, like, honey packets were, they felt like they were rotting my teeth.
Yeah.
I mean, I was getting a toothache during the race from those things. So I don't know. It's just so many carbohydrates. And I think that I could have done a better job leading up to the race, getting my body used to having that many carbs. And I know that's something Adam's talked about a lot. It's just, you know, kind of training your gut. So I could learn a lot from him and others.
Yeah. Miguel Angel does a great job with that. He was the one who got me into thinking like, oh, I should really be focusing on the gut training.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. Very, very good. Very important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So 12 hours in, we talked about that. Yeah. You started to peel off, what, like 18 hour? You were like hurting and then you just kept going.
It just felt like I was going slower. I also did get a little bit frustrated because I think I realized how fast I'd have to go to get to 250. And I just wasn't up for it. I don't know. It wasn't that I wasn't trying anymore. I was just kind of doubtful and a little bit discouraged, but I was like, just keep on pace, you know? And so I tried to do that, but I think I was riding at closer to like 9.5 miles an hour by the end of the race. It slowed down quite a bit. At the start, I was at like 12 and a half.
Really? So, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fast. You mentioned the toothache thing. I've definitely had that happen to me. I started brushing my teeth like halfway through.
Oh, good
and
idea.
That really helps. Yeah. Like it actually hurts to brush your teeth because you have so much sugar on your teeth.
Oh yeah.
But, totally. It hurts less than it would if you waited. So,
right.
Highly recommend.
I feel like I learn a little bit with each ultra. Like there's definitely a learning curve. And maybe I should do some kind of a like blog entry for new riders or something, because like a lot of people have been talking to me, especially in Cincinnati. We have a great inline and quad group of skaters who are interested in going next year, and a lot of women, which is great. So I think maybe trying to support, maybe we can support each other, you know, getting there next year. But I really appreciate all the advice that's been given to me by a lot of the veteran riders at Ultra and La Diga. So want to pass that along, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Even if you, blog post is a great idea. Getting it out publicly in any way is really good.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've started doing too is taking notes. It's maybe a little late for this, but I take notes on like the plane back.
Yeah.
That are like thoughts that are fresh in my mind. Like, hey, this didn't work at all. Like, this is why you tapped out. Like, cause you forget, you know, you're not going to remember anything. I barely remember the event now. Like, it like is a blur, like the actual event itself, like skating.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you remember each mile, you know, it'd be impossible.
No, not at all.
So yeah, 246, a lot of miles, and you're thinking you might try and best that record still. You're still going for it. You're not out yet.
Yeah. Of course I'll try. Again, I don't know. It's hard to tell what the conditions will be like and what shape my body will be in next year. But I think if I continue, like this year, I was just very well prepared training wise. I made an effort to do that like 3 times a week, 20 to 40 miles, and just kind of, you know, maintain, that physical ability. So I'm just going to try to do the same next year. We'll see where I end up. How about you?
Yeah, I think, for me, I'm going to keep the same plan. If the weather's good, I'm just going to keep trying. I got a lot of training to do. I'm going to Dutch Ultra Skate, which is 6 hours.
Oh, wow.
It's not a 24, it's just six.
Awesome. But
that'll be really fun just to do one of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something about like making like a mile goal that like you probably feel it too sometimes, where it can be like almost toxic to think like, oh, I got to get 250. I got to do this. I got to do that. And like,
yeah,
I worry like with guys like Adam, Joe, like these world record, and you too, obviously, like these record holders, like, and pressure being put on you guys to be like, oh, you got to come back next year and do better. Like, aren't you going to do better next year? And it's like, that's not really how it works. Right. Like we mentioned already,
right.
Like weather plays a huge role. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes the day's not right. Like it's not a linear progression.
Not at all.
Progress itself isn't linear, right? It's I worry about that. And like we also mentioned, sometimes you don't have the money to like.
Yeah.
I worry about that too. I don't want to put pressure on people to like come out to events, right? If they can't make it happen, they can't make it happen. And then perform too is another layer of pressure that just isn't really necessary.
Oh yeah. I mean, there are so many unseen variables too, like someone's mental health or, you know, any kind of issues they might be dealing with in their personal lives. So many factors that play into this, work stress, all kinds of things leading up to the big day. So, yeah, I think we all need to be a little bit more gentle on ourselves.
Yeah, but definitely.
Overall, we should all just be there having fun. You know, it's kind of the icing on the cake if we get a record or a trophy, but it's just that I'm there for the community and, you know, really just trying to do well by my own standards, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Speaking of community, right? Let's get into some social push talk. So
sure.
You run Social Push Cincinnati, Cincy, on Instagram. Can you describe a little bit about what like the social push scene is and like how it kind of like came about, if you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I definitely know. So Lake, this guy from New York City, you're probably familiar with him. He started the Social Push New York crew a little over a year ago, I believe. And they have a wonderful crew. I think maybe 40 regular riders who come out. They do a weekly push on Tuesdays, starting at Columbus Circle, different route every time. I think they actually based Social Push New York off of Social Cycling in New York. So that actually came first. And I'd heard about this crew. I was getting into LDP, you know, maybe a year and a half ago now and looking for people to push with in Cincinnati. Mostly it was kind of selfish. Like I have no one to ride with. I'm hanging out with this downhill crew. No one wants to push. And I was like, how can I get people to come out? So I did a couple of test runs and just, you know, I maybe had 10 people in attendance, including some downhill people who thought they would never push 4 miles and came out and did like 15 miles. And then they were like, oh, I could actually do this. This is possible. And so I just kind of made it an experiment, you know, will this work or not? And I did a lot of, not research, but like I asked a lot of people what they were looking for in a push group. And, you know, do we want to keep it so that we're riding as fast, only as fast as the slowest rider? Or, you know, do we want to be crazy like New York City? They don't have really any rules. They're just kind of skating through the streets. Whoever makes it, makes it. It's a wild experience. I've joined them on a couple of rides and it's just pretty crazy. Just a totally different group. But with ours, we decided if someone needs to turn around and go back, we're going to go back with that person. So we try to keep it really chill. We do about, I'd say, 6 to 15 miles in any given week.
Nice.
It's once a week, but not always on Tuesdays. I pick different routes around the city, and also in Northern Kentucky, and other people help with curating the route. Usually we do, we've done trails and street skating, but we also do some like park skating and pump tracks and stuff like that. Try to keep it interesting. And then we always end with food and drinks at some location, you know, just to kind of make it more of a social gathering. And it's been pretty successful so far. We have a great little regular group that comes out and adding new people all the time. So
wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like the way you've curated that whole experience with like finding new routes and like going to cool locations. So will you skate out to like a pump track or something?
So usually we'll, you know, everybody drives to a location, like say it's a pump track, we'll start with an hour at the pump track and then we'll do a skate from there and we'll, you know, do a loop, come back and go to a nearby restaurant. So usually start and end at the same place just to kind of keep it simple. But yeah, what makes us different is that we are starting at different locations around the city every time. Like New York is always starting at Columbus Circle.
Cool.
But they have a lot more, I think, options in New York City of where to sort of with one launching point, whereas it might get a little bit boring downtown since you start starting point every time. So, yeah, we're doing some things in the suburbs and we have 52 neighborhoods here. So we were trying to get all over the place.
Yeah, I really like that idea of finding new spots. But yeah, you make a great point with the New York City. It's like they can start from that one spot and just sprawl out in any direction, and it would be pretty fun.
And it could be interesting, you know.
I do like that you you encourage the use. Did you say you encourage the use of helmets?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I encourage it because I feel kind of liable for people's safety when I'm bringing them all around the city. Do have a little disclaimer on our website. I'm not sure how that would hold up.
Yeah, I wonder about the liability situation there.
I mean, obviously, it's at everyone's own risk. We're all adults. But yeah, do try to encourage safety gear. And like, especially if we're incorporating downhill elements and so forth, and try to let people know what to expect in terms of the difficulty level and the mileage, the type of terrain that we'll be covering and so forth. But it's hard. I can't get out and explore every single route prior to the skate. Like, usually I'll plan the route via Google Maps. So there's a little bit of just sort of winging it involved.
The routes, are they on trails, or are you pretty easily able to skate in the road and stuff? What's the
Both. We have some wonderful trails here. We're really lucky. We have hundreds of miles of trails. And a lot of them connect. So we were able to do that. But also the city streets are pretty easy to navigate. So we've done both and try to mix it up.
Is it like a pretty bicycle-friendly city or a bike path-friendly city? No?
No. Yeah, none of the bike paths connect. The bike paths are not well maintained. I mean, there are great groups doing work in the city, like Cincy Red Bike. But no, I would not describe this as a very bike-friendly city. And it is definitely dangerous skating on the streets. But I think when you're in a group, it makes it a little bit safer. And we all have these wonderful safety vests now that are branded safety vests. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I think also the whole like assemble as a group and just make your presence known is great on a lot of fronts, because like younger people might see you when they're driving, like when they're in the car or something. Like kids might see you and be like, that seems like a cool thing. Right. I want to do that.
Yeah, or
like,
exactly.
You know, adults too, right? They'll be like, that's what I could be doing right now instead of whatever I'm going to, you know, like just making your presence known. Also, as far as like advocacy, like the more your presence is there, like the more reason they have to make better bike lanes and stuff.
Exactly. And there's a lot of groups. There are a lot of groups doing advocacy in the city, like Cincinnati Skate Park Project. They've been advocating for skateboarding to be legal within the city, like the downtown limits, because currently I don't think that it's legal. And they've also been advocating for new skate parks to be built and so forth. Other great groups like Cincinnati Skate Collective, which is mostly focused on quad and inline skating, but we've done a lot of partnerships with these groups. So I think it's great that we're all working together and there's a lot of overlap, like having skateboarders join their group, their group sessions and vice versa. So we're really able to build a strong community.
Yeah. That point you made about sharing or, you know, sharing events, right? I think a lot of people could learn from, like myself, even there's a lot of like cycling events that go on in my area. Yeah. And I could easily latch on and be like, hey, can I ride my board behind you guys? You know,
yeah, right.
Just again, for the whole awareness thing, like, hey, we're out here. Like, this is what we do.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So by the sound of it, do you run it by yourself? Like you say, you partner up with a lot of these, like these other people, but is it just you behind the scenes or?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's kind of become a part-time job. You know, I could definitely be better about making edits more quickly. Like I'm sitting on a lot of footage that I, you know, try to take video footage at every session, but I could probably use some support in that area. But yeah, just me.
Yeah. Any up and coming filmmakers need some work to do, reach out to Corey.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of cool like AI things that will make montages for you. I haven't done it. I have a lot of footage too I'm sitting on that I need to do stuff with.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand. I feel the pain. I understand. And like a million, you know, Instagram to run, a million other things that I should be doing.
It's
that,
hard to keep up.
Right. Yeah. And then of course I have a job that I that makes me money.
Right. Yeah.
I have a living I need to work on. Cool. So you run it by yourself. typical meetup is, like you said, anywhere between 8 to 15 miles, I think is what you said, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we'll do a shorter, like if we're trying to attract beginners, we'll do like a 3 or 4 mile paired with, you know, like a skate park session. But yeah, I try to keep it to like 8 to 15. And we do an annual event called Poker Push, which is coming up again this summer, that we partner with Ohio Downhill Skate, and that's 15 miles along the Little Miami Trail. Really great event. We had maybe 25 or 30 people last year, so trying to grow that as like an official event. But mostly it's just pretty chill.
And the Poker Push, I'm going to try and guess what this is. I think I remember seeing it. It's you like collect 5 cards throughout, yeah, like a scavenger hunt, and then whoever has the best poker hand wins.
Yeah, it's, there are 5 checkpoints along the route. So if you hit a checkpoint, you get a card. And then, yeah, best poker hand wins. And we had so many great prizes last year. I think everybody walked away with something. Lots of boards given away. So, yeah.
That's great.
Hopefully people will come out.
Yeah, giveaways are awesome. There's like a question of like getting the product there, right? But mm-hmm. all you got to do is ask, right? It doesn't hurt to
ask these companies. Yeah, I mean, most places have been very generous.
Do you remember what the best poker hand was?
I don't, but it wasn't mine. I don't know.
Cool. That's an awesome event. I love stuff like that. We did like a sticker scavenger hunt once. It was one of the post Ultra Skate events. And it was brutal because one of the stickers you had to run to the lifeguard tower for. And on Miami Beach, there's all these like really pretty, for people who may not know, there's all these really pretty lifeguard towers. And you got to find the right one. So, but they're on, you know, sand. So you're running through like powder sand to try and get this sticker. You got your skateboard in your hand. Like,
that sounds fun.
And then you keep running. Like, and this is the day after Ultra Skate. So it's like, no one's moving very quickly.
Yeah.
That was one of the more fun, like one of the more fun events I've ever done, including races and stuff like that.
How many ultras have you done now?
I've done 9.
That's insane.
At Miami only. Yeah, I've never done Dutch, so yeah, getting up there, almost at 2,000 miles. I think I need 2 more years for it, though. So
that's awesome. There.
I think Aaron might be one of the only ones. Aaron Mohammadi is one of the only ones who's hit 2,000.
Okay, I hope we're all like 75 someday and still.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that more now that like I put that into perspective. Like, oh, it's been 10 years of this, like. Cause I missed 1 year. So it has been 10 years of ultra skating, and like it doesn't feel like that. So like 10 more years, it's going to be like, oh, I've got 19 of these, like, or whatever, you know, damn, like I got to figure out. Yeah. I don't just keep doing them, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
My thing that I like in the back of my head, that's maybe a little toxic, but maybe I shouldn't have, is I average my mileage. I was always like, oh, let me see if I can have my career ultra skate average be above 200. And like, yeah, I'm not quite there yet, but like that's so amazing. Hard. That's so hard though, because you have to do 200 every time. But then like I have a couple years that are like 115. So I have to make up those 85 miles.
Oh, with, like, so you do have to get to 300.
Yeah, I have to. One 300 year would put me in good spot, but I still wouldn't be at 2000. I still wouldn't be 200 average. Uh-huh. So it's got to keep doing them, but you have to perform every time. And like I said this at the beginning of the recording, I wanted to ask you a question about 200. So you've done it twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't any easier the second time though, correct?
It was easier this year. I have no idea why.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why. I think I was better prepared, like training wise.
Nice.
And, I was having more fun this year. I don't know why. I think it was the weather probably, or.
You seem like you were having a great time.
Yeah. I mean, I think like I knew people this year. I came into it last year not knowing anyone. I think my first LDP event was like a couple months. It was the skate camp in Florida. A couple months before Altered. First time I had ever done LDP. And I was just getting to know everybody. And now I feel like this is my crew. So it was just cool being out there with everybody.
Yeah. Feeling that like that hype and just the camaraderie. Vibes were good. Camaraderie. Yeah. Goes a long way. Yeah. Because you wouldn't do the 24-hour if you didn't have people to do it with, right? Like, it's not something you just go out and do. I forget sometimes that it's actually the community and the people coming together that gets me out to these things.
Yeah, definitely.
We focus a lot on the training and like personal performance. And Callie and I talked about main character syndrome, right? Everyone in LDP is a main character, right? We all have a story that brought us here. And but really what brings us back is our friends, right? And like the community.
Yeah, I think it would be really cool if we could all get there even a little bit earlier and have the groupscape be prior to the event so that we can actually have some energy to do it. Or, you know, we could have another, a second event that's prior. Because I really enjoyed skating with Callie and Gavin. I had never met Callie before, and I was just like a behind the scenes fan.
Starstruck.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's
so
amazing.
It was so cool meeting her. Yeah.
Yeah. She's one of the coolest people I know. Really fun to talk to, you know, mm-hmm. always has something on her mind. I like your idea about doing an event before. The one thing that worries me about that is getting hurt or whatever. Like, I wouldn't really go hard, right? What I did this year, I stayed a few days after, more than I have in the past. And mm-hmm. that was awesome because there's no pressure of the event coming up. You're in Miami. Yeah. You can just hang out. I was eating all this food, like not caring about like any of that, like get drinks, whatever. I mean, you said you got drinks the night before. You still did 246. So I don't think that really matters, but
I had one drink.
You had one. Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty good. But yeah, the food in Miami is so good. And I didn't want to go too crazy leading up to the event because you don't want to eat something wrong. I was eating pretty boring food like pasta and the sub, you know.
Same.
So, but I'm just eating and eating and eating. After Ultra Skate, it's been a month out. I'm still eating as though I'm carbo loading for the event.
Yeah, those few days after, I turned to Ivy and I was like, hey, like, I can't stop eating. Like, we just had a meal. I'm still hungry. Like, you have to like get a sandwich on the way back from this place. You know? And it was a funny feeling just being so like depleted and just always hungry. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Luckily, like you said, there's great food in the area. So,
well, what I want to know what your after ultra meal is of choice.
Absolutely.
Day after, what do you, or day of, you know, when you're done with the race, what do you need?
I could break this down for you. So, it's changed over the years. Like, it's been, you know, all over the place. But like the first year, for instance, we get back and we pass out and then we ordered a pizza, right? And that was amazing. Uh-huh. Like, pizza, yeah. Obviously, you're gonna have that. But like this last year, so I'm vegan now. I wasn't vegan the first time, but now there's amazing vegan food in Miami.
Yeah.
And there is a bakery called Le Artisan, or it's French. I don't know if that's how you say it. Creative bakery. It's all vegan. They have these amazing croissants. Incredible. They're like world's best. And a bunch of other pastries. They have really good breakfast sandwiches, stuff like that. So we always go there every nice. Year. Always. Miguel, Angel, and his partner Hope, they come with us. I think Adam actually does it too. I don't know if he goes to the same place, but he's big on the pastries. So it might be a thing next year for those listening. If you want to get pastries after Ultra next year, there's a group that's doing very that.
Cool. I'm in.
Yeah, you're very much welcome. Yeah, anyone's welcome to come. So I do
might
that.
Have to get pastries delivered to my hotel room if I can't move.
So we did that one year because we were in Coral Gables, I think is where the bakery is. There's a couple locations, but yeah. Mm-hmm. DoorDash. There's so many different ones. Yeah, we called DoorDash though this time. My brother got it. You can get Taco Bell like veganized, right? Without the meat, without the cheese. Oh. And they have potatoes. So we got straight up Taco Bell like the morning. It's like 10 a.m. You know, race ended at 7 a.m. We're like eating Taco Bell. Yeah, it was.
I love it.
It was actually one of the best meals I've ever had. So I don't highly doubt recommend. It. And then there's a really good sushi place called Planta and another one called Minty Z. Minty Z is a really nice place to go. I got restaurant recommendations for days.
Like, yeah, do we need to start like a group Excel sheet so we can track all these?
Yeah. Like what to do in Miami after Ultra Skate. For sure. For sure. Hitting the beach though is something you got to do after.
I've heard, but I have never made it there. I truly am just lying in my hotel room for 2 days after Ultra.
That's fine too. I mean, yeah. Hotel rooms are oddly like have that weird like comforting vibe to them. Do you know what I mean? It's like
I do, although I'm usually staying at a shithole, but yeah.
Right. But like just having the TV and like being in bed is kind of this like comforting feeling.
Yeah. I actually really lucked out this year. I stayed at the the Floridian. And the staff was so wonderful. Like, they actually helped me out because they saw I was struggling to move, and like, they were great. Well, it's a motel too. So like, you can park right at your door, which is good for when you're immobile.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Did they know what you had just done, or were they just like, wow, this woman's struggling, let's go help her?
I told them I had just done a race. Yeah, I didn't get into the details, but yeah, they saw something was going on.
Yeah.
Nice. Carry my stuff in the door. So yeah, highly recommend.
Awesome. Well, hey, I really want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
This has been an awesome conversation. Really good stuff.
Yeah.
Is there anything else, though, you want to say that we didn't get to cover and maybe not related to skateboarding? Could be anything.
So I hope that everybody joins us for Social Push at some point. You know, and I plan on going to other Social Push groups. There are other cities that are doing it, Philly, DC. There's one now that Shreddy Mercury is running. And so, yeah, I'm planning to head to those cities and check them out. But if anybody wants to come and experience Cincinnati, got a lot of great trails, can try downhill.
I guess one question I forgot to ask you is how would people start their own Social Push? Do you just do it and then... Or is there someone you should talk to just to like get on the registry?
I mean, like, I think just like checking in with people who might be interested in joining you and seeing what kind of vibe they want, because like, I do think every city is different in how they approach it.
For sure.
And, you know, just seeing like what the overall skill level is of the riders who are interested. Yeah, just kind of like constantly checking in with riders to see if anything can be improved. Like, we have a Discord chat. We're all friends now. So it cool. makes it easy for someone to vocalize a complaint or an idea or something like that. Yeah.
You have a Discord for your Social Push group?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Cool. It's not like all Social Push groups in one Discord.
No, but that could be cool.
That would be a great idea. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Discord, for people who don't know, is a like chat service. It's like a pretty cool thing. There's a LDP Distance Skateboarding Discord too that Clark started. I don't know.
Oh yeah, I'm in that. I'm not super active. It's hard to keep up with all of them, but yeah.
And like, people probably hearing that, like, oh, Discord, like I have to do another thing. Like, there's Instagram, right. There's Facebook, there's all this stuff. Now Discord, like, yeah. Hard to keep track of all the notifications. Like,
yeah,
it's miserable. Where will we see you next? I think I already asked you this, but is it Ladiga that you're going to next?
Yeah. And I can't even remember the exact date of Ladiga, but there's also the Five Borough Bike Tour in New York City, which is not a long, like an LDP event. It's a cycling event, but a few skateboarders have done it. It's a 40-mile ride through all the five boroughs of New York. So if anybody's interested in doing like a cool, fun city ride, a few of us are going to do that this year as well. But really looking forward to Ladiga. Five Borough is on May 5th, and then Ladiga is what day?
June 6th, 7th, okay, yeah. And 8th, I think. 6th to the 9th, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, looking forward to doing both of those.
Sweet. Yeah, Ladiga is going to be fun. I think we're getting a bus this year to help bus people around, make it a little easier.
Yeah.
Any social media we should plug? Obviously, you know, we have Social Push Cincy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your Wander Crust, is that correct?
Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor to be asked. There's so many cool people who have been involved with this, and you're doing a great job. So,
I mean, I appreciate you coming on. And by the way, people asked me to interview. So like, there was a lot of interest in hearing your thoughts and, you know, your experience at Ultra and that. So like,
oh my God, that's crazy.
And I had already had you on my list. So I was like, all right, she's going to the top now. So the fact that you were so quick to respond and were willing to meet, is this really works for my schedule. So I really appreciate
that. Well, it's been really fun. Love getting to know you. Looking forward to getting to know everybody better. I can't believe I'm only a little over a year into this, and I just feel like I have this wonderful family of, you know, people.
Yeah.
So very cool.
Yeah, you're in now. You're stuck in the loop.
Yep.
You're not going to get out. Awesome. Hey, thanks, Corey. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Max. Have a great weekend.
You too.